Blog Talk Radio.
And good morning, welcome. And I always say, there's morning someplace in the world. And right now on the East Coast, it is our good morning. Joining us today will be our student host, Walter Pierce. Our confidant and historian, man of information, Mr. Shelton Harris, will be accompanying us. And, of course, as usual, we will have people who call in and join the conversation. So without any further ado, I'd like to start out the program with a conversation that was had before the show on the subject of going along to get along. And it seems that when I discussed this particular topic, I found myself saying that it was just a chain of events, but it was more so a quest moment. And I'll start by saying a cornucopia of physics dictates that where there are vibrations, there must be a medium. And all vibrations possess a wave nature. In our community, our art is in fact and in spirit the medium through which our waves travel. Where there is no medium, there are no vibrations. And the vibrations that I send out to you this morning is that we live in a society where a lot of controversy and divisiveness and misinformation is being put out into the public over and over. And as a people who have been striving for over 100 years for some type of equality, we find ourselves still pushing, but only making small advances. Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we've made more and larger advances. Walter, are you on the line? Walter, are you on the line? Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, probably so.
Oh, okay, yes. I just said I will get right into my diamonds unless you have anything else to say.
Well, I was trying to get a nice, good lead in. What did you think?
Oh, yeah, I heard it.
Well, good morning, Walter. How are you?
I'm good.
Okay, you all prepared with the intro?
Yes.
Go for it. It's on you.
All right. So for today's segment, it's diamonds, the first one of today. And history is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply, and you are bound to find yourself. And for the diamonds of today, the diamonds I chose, the person I chose for today is Charles Evers. Now, James Charles Evers, who rarely used his first name, was born in Decatur, Mississippi on September 11, 1922, the oldest of four children of James and Jesse Wright Evers. His father was a laborer and his mother was a maid, though they owned a funeral home and a sawmill. Charles and Medgar, who was 3 years younger, once saw a family friend lynched. They walked miles to segregated schools. He says, we never understood why the white kids could ride in the big, yellow, shiny bus while we sloughed through the mud, Charles told the New York Times in 1968. That disturbed us. Although we were a little more than many, we never did feel any different than other Negroes. And Megan and I always said we were going to change that. For all their similarities, college graduates, implacable foes of segregation and violent racism, The brothers were quite unlike. Megger, gentle and diplomatic, became a brilliant civil rights organizer. Charles, blunt, aggressive, and ambitious, became a businessman and a small-time criminal, running numbers, prostitution, and bootleg whiskey rackets in Mississippi and Chicago. But nearly a decade after he had been run out of Mississippi, Charles Davenant, that made his brother a national civil rights martyr, quit the rackets, returned from Chicago, and replaced Megger as the Mississippi field director of the NAACP. He organized registration drives for black voters, economic boycotts against white businessmen, but white businesses, and challenges to the state white Democratic Party structure. Over the next decade, he became a nationally known civil rights figure in his own right. He was co-chairman of Senator Robert F. Kennedy's Mississippi campaign for the Democratic presidential nomination in 1968, and a leader of the Mississippi's first racially integrated delegation to the Democratic National Convention that year in Chicago. He also ran for Congress in 1968, though unsuccessfully. The next year, he was elected mayor of Fayette, Mississippi, becoming the first African-American in a century to hold that post in a town of 1,600, whose black majority had for years been kept from the polls by intimidation and violence. The election made headlines across the country, stunning a deep South that has been forced to confront its racist past and the implications of black voters' power at the poll. He served as mayor 4 times. He says, hands that pick Kanye can now pick the mayor. He mapped changes for biracial municipalities that would throw out Jim Crow's ordinances and no longer tolerate disrespect from the police and uncollected trash in black communities. As reporters from national publications visited Fayette to gauge progress, white and black residents continued to live on opposite sides of a social gulf. But Mayor Evers attracted $10 million for the development of factories, businesses, and medical centers, create hundreds of jobs. And the civil rights campaign across the region made noticeable strides. The progress made by the NAACP in Mississippi under Charles Evers has been spectacular, a biography says about him. And writing publicity that made him a household name in the United States, Mr. Evers in 1971 became the first African-American candidate for governor of Mississippi. His run as an independent was backed by Coretta Scott King, the Congressional Black Caucus, Mayor John V. Lindsay, and the New York and civil rights leaders across the country. In an effort to undercut critics, he detailed his shady past in a memoir, Evers. A little more information about him also. He served in the Korean War. Mr. Evers settled in Philadelphia, Mississippi, which became notorious for the 1964 slaying of 3 civil rights workers. He opened a hotel, restaurant, cab service, gas station, became a disc jockey, and promoted prostitution and bootlegging. The authorities and business rivals drove him out, and in 1956, he fled to Chicago to continue his businesses and rackets there. And that was a little more background at the end, before he became a civil rights activist and became active in politics and making a change. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Harris, I would like for you to, chime in, and I would like for you to ask Walter a question. Go for it.
Okay, yeah. Hey, Charles Evers, for the most part, was a very, very successful brother trying to get into the political game. But the way he navigated through it, from what I see, was he came out as a losing candidate, mainly because of his direction, not for his thoughts and his ideas. So Walter, did you know that that Charles Evers went from being a Freedom Democrat back in the 60s and 70s, he became an independent, and then he became a Republican at the end of his life. And he endorsed Ronald Reagan. He had, even though he did support Barack Obama in his two elections, but then he supported Donald Trump when he was one of the presidential electors for Mississippi. He voted one of the winning votes for Donald Trump when he became president. And what do you feel about the whole, his whole journey, about where he started from and where he ended up, and should he be getting all the praise that he is, or should there be more?
I think he deserves to be looked at more, and he deserves more praise, and that's because I believe a lot of people really don't know who he is. And the reason being, you know, his brother being Michael Evers, a lot of people, they know who he is, but they don't know about his family. And his brother in particular, I barely knew about him. Even people I knew barely knew about him. So I had to look him up, and I just seen all of these things that he's done. He's done more. He's done a lot. Like, a lot. Like, think about he became from a notorious criminal, bootlegging and all that, to becoming a mayor and civil rights activist and being a part, have a high position in NAACP and raising lots of money for his city. Just all of that he's done, I believe he deserves more praise. Even though who he supported probably at the end of his life or the changes he's made, still he deserves some recognition because of what he has done and what he has achieved throughout his lifetime.
Oh, yeah, okay. That sounds good. And, you know, I just want to interject some little stuff in there, because, granted, he did run for governor of Mississippi in 71 and lost, obviously. And when he ran for the Senate in 78, he ran as an independent. And that kind of siphoned a lot of the black vote from the Democratic candidate, which led to Thad Cochran becoming the senator from Mississippi, who later became the chairman of the Appropriations Committee. And he was in there from 1978 till 2018. So sometimes we can have altruistic thoughts, but if we don't deal with stuff on a practical level, we can lose a lot of the power of the things that we're trying to do by not doing them in a way that conducive to the whole group instead of the individual. But that's the end for me.
Okay,
Mr. Bay.
Very good. You know, when we look at politics, you know, we're looking at a vehicle that is supposed to be governed for the people, by the people, but for some reason, it seems like it's for the politician and for the money. And what might best serve that political individual? Over time, in some instances, we found people in political positions change their position for the benefit of themselves. And that seems to be a problem, because after a while of being in a particular political position over years, one becomes complacent and begins to believe that it is a job that only they could do and only they can do the best. And they know best for the majority of the people without ever really listening. And to keep a complacent constituency that is comfortable with the way things are without change. Mr. Harris, did that make any kind of sense?
Yes, it did to me, because if you look over the years of the political system in America, those people who would come out and have the masses or their constituents' point of view mainstream in their mind, those people don't stay as politicians too long. So some of them feel that, well, in order for me to be able to help my people, I have to help myself. And, you know, and sometimes those two goals get conflicted, where, like you said, it's more of a you, me, instead of a us. And that's the problem that I see. You have some politicians that's been in there for 30, 40 years, and nothing has changed within their constituency. But they're there, and they, like you said, they believe that they're the only ones who can do this position. And it's been a problem. It's time for a change.
Right. And on the subject of black and white, because, you know, every week it seems as though we're saying the same things over and over, and I know for a fact that this program needs to be solution-oriented as well as provide information. This is a fight for humanity that we see in the streets today, and it's a fight that just didn't start with Black Lives Matter, and it's not going to end with just black lives. It's a fight for humanity and the people who have been marginalized and pushed to the side for over 100 years in this country. Walter, without me babbling on, what do you have up next for us?
Next, I'll be going into definitions. And to start off, definitions. This segment provides the listener with words and their meaning so that we can achieve together a common basis to say we care and believe in ourselves. Remember, whoever controls our definitions controls us. We must define existence and not have it defined for us. And the definition for today that was mentioned also in the diamonds is implacable. And implacable, it's not a lengthy definition. The definition of it is either relentless or unstoppable. And implacable was used to describe Charles Everest for today, because when you go back to the diamonds, they use that word meaning relentless or unstoppable, and that's exactly what Charles Everest was. Because if you think about the beginning of his life going into adulthood, he started participating in criminal activity. He was also in the war before that. So, you know, you have to be relentless for that. He participated in a lot of criminal activity, racketeering, bootlegging, owned businesses, and made him even more relentless and unstoppable is because he was able to stop all of that. And stop all the criminal activity to be able to keep the thing going in the family after Mega was assassinated, to keep his name and to fight for what Mega was fighting for, and to move from Chicago to Mississippi, have a high position in NAACP, become mayor, bring a lot of jobs to his area, Mississippi, and also run for government and state position. And, you know, that's a person who's relentless, implacable, because that's a lot on somebody to be able to do all that, be a civil rights activist, just to remove your past, forget that even happened, and just to come to a situation in Mississippi and to keep it going, that's somebody who's relentless, implacable.
Okay. Good job once again. Mr. Harris, we're going to do this again. I would like for you to contribute something to say about today's definition and follow it through with a possible question for Walter about his definition for today.
Yeah, all right. So the word, you know, we're talking about somebody being not capable of being appeased, like you're not going to change the way he's thinking. That's more what an implacable is to me, you know, and that could be a double-edged sword, because you can be real adamant in the ideas and stuff that you have as an individual, but if they're not helping the masses of the people, you can be implacable to the nth degree, and you're still not helping the masses because you're looking for the wrong, you're looking for the right thing the wrong way, you know, because like most of the images and stuff that we've been listening to from our politicians, we're looking for civil rights. And the whole idea of civil rights means that somebody else has the power to give you something that you should already have according to the Constitution inalienably. And I don't know if that's a word. But the issues that we really have are not civil rights. These are human rights. And, you know, and as soon as we start talking about human rights, then the whole narrative changes. Because now we're not looking for you to give us anything. We're looking to accept and demand things that we should already have. And so, given the word implacable, in the Charles Evers, you know, mindset that we're talking about, how do you feel that he felt? Do you think that the death of his brother kind of focused him more into the same mindset that his brother had with civil rights, or was he moving towards trying to do something that's going to help the masses of the people? How do you feel about that?
That's exactly what motivated him, the death of his brother, because he's seen what his brother was able to accomplish and what he was going to accomplish before his assassination. And once it happened, I think that motivated him to start to do something about it. And he wanted to be able to, somebody needs to step up and to continue the reign and continue the fight for Medgar Evers. So when he heard about that, he had no other choice but to move and to keep fighting and to go continue the fight, continue the struggle. And he not only did that, but he did a lot more. Because again, he gave jobs to lots of people, hundreds of people. He invested a lot of money into the city. He ran for state government positions. He also was a big key part in the NAACP. He had a big position for Mississippi, and he had a big part for Mississippi, and he was a part of the civil rights movement. So just thinking about that, he really had no choice but to continue his push for his brother as he passed.
And as far as because his brother was working for civil rights, you know, back in the 50s and the 60s and stuff, that was our focus, because we thought that if we came up with a good enough argument that we would get the masses of people in power to be able to understand that this is just something you should do out of the kindness of your heart, you know. But you think the civil rights track is more, or that you can get more out of the civil rights track than you can from a human rights track? The whole human rights track says, you can't tell me I can't do this. And, you know, and I'm going to do it whether you like it or not. That was Malcolm X's mindset. He was looking for human rights. And just before he died, he was getting ready to go to the UN to, like, demand human rights in the UN against the United States. And he just happened to die like a couple of weeks before that happened, you know. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about the juxtaposition between civil rights and human rights?
I believe if you really think about it, human rights, you need human rights to be able to fight for some of the civil activities, civil rights that you want. Because human rights, if you don't have the basic human rights where people so-called make laws to make you seem not even person, like three-fifths of a human, that used to be a thing for African Americans. And you just got three requirements. It was like, I guess, some five requirements to be human. They only count them as three, which was dumb and stupid. But if you need human rights to be able to fight for anything else, because you have to think about it. How should I say it? We are all human, and if you think of less than a human, nobody is going to listen to you. So if nobody listens to you, you can't fight for anything else. So the first thing that should be on your mind to fight for is human rights. To be considered and have people think and consider you as human, even though we already are, but we need people to understand that we're human as well. And
No, I was going to say, because as far as the Constitution was originally written, we had to have an amendment to the Constitution to even say that we were human beings, period. You know, that's what the 13th Amendment was. Okay, you're not chattel slavery anymore. Now you're a human being. So all of the stuff in the Constitution, when it was originally written, had nothing to do with dealing with us as human beings until the 13th, 14th Amendment. You know, and there was so much segregation. It wasn't just against black and white. Women didn't even have the vote until 1920. You know, they gave black men a vote before they gave the white woman a vote. You know, and it's always been that the small group of people at the top want to consolidate all of their power as much as possible. And that they will give a little bit to people around, but not enough for them to change their position of being on top. That was the whole idea of the white supremacy to start with.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that, Mr. Bay?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what I'm thinking. I'm actually thinking on the political end of things, where we elect particular politicians and we hold them up like they're some kind of rock stars. And sometimes this today's society, a lot of times, we've forgotten that they are supposed to be public servants as opposed to rock stars or some kind of celebrity. There is no celebrity in public service. You know, public service is to be held accountable to your constituency to make a change and a difference. And I think somewhere along the line, the lines got blurry and people have forgotten. Now, where am I going? What is my point? My point is it takes not just the battle of human rights, but the battle on the political front, the battle and I'm going to say the music front. It takes the battle on a number of different fronts to make a change and to make a difference. And I think that when we get together on the phone and produce a program every week, we again try to assert solutions to problems that have existed for a long time. And while we might not have all the answers, we bring a lot of questions to the forefront. And everybody needs to understand that they need to be politically active, they need to be historically astute, and they need to know what they're talking about before they begin to open up their mouths and say things and do things under the guise of politics, under the guise of religion, under the guise of this is what's new, this is what's happening, right? So where am I going?
Absolutely.
What am I talking about? I'm talking about you, the listener, supporting Quest Youth Radio. And I want to open up the line to the listeners that are on the phone. I have 1421. I think I know who that is. Say good morning. Hello.
Hi. I'm never going to pronounce his name correctly, but he's the other member of the Navajo Town Council, and they're looking at these things, how they're
okay.
So they go hand in hand. I'll find out on the board, and we'll keep everybody in touch with what's happening in Chapel Hill, and I'd be interested in knowing what's happening in Cargo around the whole reallocation of that.
There was an interesting article about from the Chapel Hill Police about their social work unit, which they said usually accompanies the police officer on any of these calls that seem to indicate, you know, domestic violence or some mental health issue. But they also said
What was that? Okay. Walter, are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's what I get. All right. Val, are you there? I know you are.
Good morning.
Hello? Oh, good morning. Apparently, I let somebody on the line and they had something else going on. Any comments from you, Val?
Nice segment. It was nice hearing about another civil rights activist that I had never heard of before.
Okay. All right. We're going to call that a wrap. Mr. Harris, any last words?
Just that the struggle continues. So we need to keep focused on what's, like you said, the solutions to our problems, because we all know what the problems are. So just stay focused.
Okay, Mr. Harris, I didn't go off on a tangent too far, did I?
No, but it all comes back to the same thing. So there's really no such thing as a tangent if it's still everything's connected.
Ah, I love the math in you, my brother. Okay, and on that note, Walter, excellent job. Val, thank you for joining in, and everyone else on the line. We're going to call this a wrap, and until next week, we'll see you. Thank you very much. And Quest Youth Radio is the best
youth radio.